Welcome to Office Hours with Adam Peterson, where I talk to business owners, employees, entrepreneurs and experts to find answers to those day-to-day questions about life and work in Luxembourg. If you have questions you'd like answered, let me know at adam.peterson@rtl.lu or on LinkedIn. But for now, on to today's show. My bus journey this morning was grey, low cloud and drizzle. If you live in Luxembourg, you'll be familiar with the weather I'm talking about. But towards the bottom of Route d'Esch, there was a flash of colour. The old CNS building has been destroyed, and in its place is a temporary wall covered in graffiti. Who are the people that bring this colour to our streets? How do they make money from their art? And did they all start off with small acts of vandalism? To help me answer these questions and more, I'm joined by Yannick Tossing, Gallery Director at the Camilla Boutique, and Daniel MacLeod, one of Luxembourg's artists. So welcome both to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So Yannick, let's start with you. So you're the Gallery Director of the Camilla Boutique. So tell me a little bit what your job is and what it involves.
Yeah, so I work for the Camilla Boutique for Raphael and Daniel that I have known for even longer. And my main job is to organize exhibitions and art fairs and try to find open calls for artists where they can paint on walls in Luxembourg and outside.
So that's your main job. You also are an artist as well.
Yeah, indeed. I'm also still an artist besides being the gallery director. And I now have an exhibition at the new V Gallery in Dudelange with another artist called Noël Bosch.
What's the purpose behind your art? Just give me the quick
line. Yeah, so mainly my art is all around artistic research about how Huntington's disease and its effects can be visualized or interpreted.
Super interesting, but not the purpose of this show. Daniel, so you're the artist here. When did you start your art?
I actually started art painting in general. I did it before even walking. I always enjoyed painting, but I never wanted to study art. I just wanted to do whatever I felt would be fun and what I enjoyed.
Artistic family? Were your parents artistic?
Everybody just enjoyed crafts and painting, but nobody ever took like real art classes or anything.
How did you go from painting and craft when you were young to being an artist now?
I just never stopped painting. It has been my passion ever since, and I enjoyed doing it as a hobby just besides school. And when I was at university for civil engineering, which is something very, very different, I realized how big of a gap that actually is, and that I really need to follow my heart and my passion.
So you're a trained civil engineer?
Almost. I didn't finish university though, but...
So you dropped out to focus on the art?
Yes, at the very beginning, the idea was to just change the subject of my studies to do something more creative. But as I just started another year at university, courses were all taken and the applications were closed for a year. And because I've been organizing my small exhibitions and art projects always besides school, I just focused more on that.
I see your work around the city, and typically if there's like a bird or something on a side of a building, that's your work.
Yeah, quite often. I think most people relate me or my work to me as soon as they see bright colors and birds. More and more over the last couple of years, that kind of bugged me, and people just, oh yeah, Daniel's the guy who only just paints birds and nothing else.
Apologies, I've already offended you then.
No, not at all, really. It just underlines this statement. And I've been working on some different style the last couple of months, so there's new things coming.
And when did you make the move from drawing on paper at class to then walls? Tell me about how you took your art outside.
Always been very inspired by the colorful graffitis. I spent most of my youth at the skate park here in Hollerich, and just being surrounded by those colorful walls and to just look at the shapes of those colorful graffitis, it always inspired me. And I think it was for my 12th birthday or something, or 13 maybe. My birthday wish was just a bunch of spray cans from the family, so I could do my own little experiments with them, and started spraying in the basement of my parents' house. And that was just the first few steps.
You were spraying it on the walls in the basement?
Yeah.
And were they happy about that, or were they?
I had the permission. I mean, you can always paint over it again. Yeah.
And you were a skater then? Were you?
Yeah, and still are, still going.
Are you a skater as well, Yannick?
I used to be back when I was around 12 to like 16, 17. Then I retried again in the mid 20s and I quickly realized that my body wasn't up to it anymore. So
I must admit, I had a similar experience when I had this youth came over me. I went to a skate park. I was in my mid 20s and I did the one trick, went to do a grind, fell backwards on my elbow, and that was it. I just had to limp off and couldn't move my arm for about 2 weeks. So
yeah, that's the problem when you take a long break.
So all skates is rigid, but let's get back to the art. You learn your trade, I guess, at the slaughterhouse, at the Schluthaus. And then when did you realize that you could have exhibitions and get out of just the walls down in Hollerith?
Yeah, I think it didn't happen at the same time, actually, like painting on walls and organizing exhibitions and small art projects. Yeah, since I've been painting and I realized this is really like my hobby, I enjoyed spending time on it. I've always wanted to do it in a kind of professional manner and present it in the best possible way, and also like to show my art works to the world. And during my school year, in the afternoons, I organized myself some exhibitions. I designed my own flyers and brought them out to the letterboxes in the village. And so I step by step, I organized my own small exhibitions, and that was my holiday job then, to run my small little art shows.
And then you would sell your art at the shows as well.
That was the idea. And at the very beginning, I was and still am very grateful and happy for every small piece of art I can find a new home for.
So they've got some people with a teenage Daniel McLeod version out there. It'll be worth even more now as your reputation has grown.
Yeah, I think I had the first real exhibition when I was like 15 or something.
Okay, and this was in the days before social media, was it? Or you were handing out flyers?
Yeah, I think I just heard about Facebook or something, but didn't have an account then or something. Very, very early stages of me, in my case, actually using social media. So
when did you get the first commission to paint on a big wall? And then was it by the government, by the commune? Tell me about that breakthrough moment.
That really depends on what you call a big wall. I mean, the first commission artwork I got to paint a mural was on a container in the back of a car garage where they just stored their scrap metal. Yeah, small steps you take along the way.
So before that, you were painting at the slaughterhouse, down at the Schluthouse. Were you doing some, what's the word? It's like wild, around the back of factories and on
oh, on, like, on yeah, I've never wanted to get in too much trouble doing like painting trains and stuff, but mostly I enjoyed more the painting process and tried to develop my artistic style and my techniques and so on, instead of just getting a adrenaline rush.
How do we get to the Kamelabutek?
It started during this gap year when I just dropped out of university, that I focused more on my art and on exhibitions, that I got to meet or reconnect with Rafael, also professional artist, and he has been working as an independent artist already a couple years before that. And we met and connected so well from the beginning. We worked on one project together and both realized how well that just worked. And since then we've been working together side by side. And at some point we just combined our studios and renovated the Kamelabutik. So
did you have the house originally? Was that your studio or did you buy it?
No, we're still renting. It belongs to Raphael's family. He used to have his studio in the on the last floor and bit of the basement. And the moment that she moved to a house for elderly people, the question came up what should happen with the house. They wanted to rent it, but there was so much renovation to do that in this moment we just thought, let's take in charge all the renovations. We renovate the whole place ourselves.
So it was the strangest place I've been. I must admit, the first time I went, I thought I was lost because I was going down this like housing estate and Natasha's saying, no, it's down here somewhere. I'm thinking there's not going to be an art gallery down here. And then almost like round the corner, this house comes that's all on the outside is let's just say, noticeable. What do the neighbors think about the renovation to be in an art gallery?
The outside wall was pretty much the last thing we realized or we renovated. Yeah, we renovated the place for 1.5 years, almost before that, next to our art project. So we are renovating the place. And I'm pretty sure that neighbors must have been pretty curious what's going on in this place and what those two crazy ones are doing with the house. And at the moment that we were painting the facade, people really came out of their houses and talked to us and said, what are you doing? And so we explained our project and what we are doing, and people are really so and still are very happy to see that we bring some life and some art into the street and the part of the city.
And the name, the Camilla Boutique.
During the renovation process, we thought a lot about the name. What would we call the place? How we found the name was in the post office. I was there to bring a box with artworks to ship for an exhibition to Paris, and there comes a kind of stamp for the insurance and so on. And the lady, she opened her drawer, and she didn't have any stamps left. And so she asked her colleague, "Do you have any insurance stamps?" And he laughed and said, "Yeah, sure. We are not a Camilla Boutique." So it's this kind of word, like, you use Camilla Boutique for a non-serious and not well-organized business. So we're not a candy shop. When I look for my stamps, I know they're in the right place. We are organized. We're a serious business. So it's, so you kind of say it like a bad word, like what a Camilla Boutique, you say for...
Something's a big mess.
Yeah, messy, not organized, not a professional place. So but it also has like this double meaning of, as a child, you enter a candy shop and you just, your eyes...
Light up with all the colors and all those sorts of things. And then how did you get involved with the Camilla Boutique then, Yannick?
So basically, I've known Raphael for a very long time. I played football with him. Even while I was still studying art in Strasbourg, I already helped him out with his art project sometimes when I was here. I mean, I was always interested in art, and he sometimes needed a little help. And from there on, I was becoming more and more that I helped him out. And then also when Daniel joined, I helped both of them out. For me, it was pretty clear when I come back to Luxembourg, I know where I could work and where I would want to work, because it's, I mean, I'm working with friends, but also working in something like in a field that I like, and something that I studied for, so I can actually use the stuff. The few things that I learned in art school.
So normally people go to university and they come out and it's the people that did the civil engineering, they go, "Oh, it's really useful," and the artists are like, "Oh yeah, I'm doing something completely different." But you're the other way around. You're the artist who's using the art and you're not using the civil engineering.
Pretty much.
We know a bit about your backstories and the Camilla Boutique. So let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll get into how they work and some of the trivia questions. In a world where access depends on privilege, I wanted to give my daughter her own place. A temporary gesture of creation, not destruction. These were the motivations behind Thomas Ayres' street performance art in Miami. He was promptly arrested and described the experience as a real descent into hell. An absurd consequence for a moment created with nothing but chalk, tenderness and freedom. Welcome back to Office Hours. In part one, we found out about the story behind the Camilla Boutique and Daniel MacLeod. In part two, I want to get into some of the chewier questions. And to start off with there, like, how do you get into street art without doing things that are illegal? Is there enough opportunity out there?
Tricky question. Also, how you define street art or graffiti, very difficult thing to talk about or to put it in the right place. I think like the example you took with Thomas, I must say he's one of the most active and actually kind of the best street artist that still really does his art in the streets. For like mural projects, or you have like legal walls, like the skate park, where you can just bring your spray cans and paint. You can.
What's the etiquette around that? If there's a piece of art there, can I just go over and paint over it? Is it disrespectful to do that? Is it respectful?
Yes, I think when you go to the place, the skate park. Let's take it for example. Once you get there, you quickly notice where you can paint and where you don't. There's some areas where you can see there just scribbles or just. Practicing walls and
when you've done your painting, is there an expectation that it will stay, that no one will paint over it for a month or 2 months? Or
no, I think when you paint in such places, you should have the expectation that somebody paints over it the following day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that also becomes part of the process, like painting temporary things to try not to get attached to it and try to. Just make it a step on your way, take a picture, and then move on to the next one.
And then I referenced at the start of the show, when they're redoing the CNS building, the new one and the old one, they have these walls. There's one up by the CHL on the Route d'Arlon as well. Graffiti there. That seems to be arranged by an organization, I Love Graffiti or something. Do you know about that organization?
It's also funded by Sader, a local, one of the pioneers of the graffiti scene here in Luxembourg. And it's a great example to show how graffiti can be in the streets and into our daily lives, and to show that it's not just a form of vandalism, but it has our place in society.
So there does seem to be some government funding and government support, some of these things. I think I was looking at the I Love Graffiti website and there was some companies and communes supporting it a little bit. Do you get any support at all for the Kamelabutek?
We do have some temporary substitutes from the government or from private institutions wherever we have a project, or sometimes it's over like a specific amount of time where we, for this specific project, and get financial help.
So your main source though comes from exhibitions and selling the art that's in the gallery?
Actually we're 100% privately funded. So we run the place with the projects and commission jobs and artworks we sell, we put back into the gallery. And
And how often do you have new exhibitions and does it turn over?
So for the past years we had quite a lot, but then we realized that sometimes when you do too much, people tend to not come that often because they tell themselves, oh, I've been there 3 months ago, I will go to the next one. So now we switched it a bit. So this year we will have one permanent exhibition where we just switch out the artworks a bit of our artists that we often work with. And then we'll try for September to really do one big exhibition where we show also the new works of our artists and not works that have already been shown throughout the year.
And so you have a network of artists that you work with, do you? And who picks, who's like the artistic director and decides who's good enough to make it into the Kamelabutek?
So basically, I think it's a bit every one of us.
Yeah.
Because we often have projects where we meet other artists, or where like other exhibitions, like group exhibitions where you meet them. And we have, I think around, let's say, 10-ish artists that we often work with again and again. So whenever we have a project, let's say where they ask us to paint 8 walls, we won't paint all the 8 walls ourselves, but we also reach out to them to ask, oh, who wants to join? And we choose them by, well, first of all, their artistic value. Like if we find that it fits in our gallery or in our world, let's say. And also really, really big point is that we just get along with them well, because we really like to work with people that we get along with, and we don't want to just have an artist for like one exhibition and then afterwards not hear from them again. Yeah. But we prefer to really make it a long time partnership, friendship.
Do you bias to Luxembourg artists? Are there enough good Luxembourgish artists around?
Yes, there are. I think there are plenty of people who just sometimes just need an opportunity to show their works or to be encouraged. And that's a big positive point on having an own gallery space, that you just have the possibility or the opportunity to bring people up or give them a chance to show their work when you think they have something to say or they have.
How do you source the young artists? Do you just keep an eye on the walls at the skate park and see something you like and find out who did it? Or do people send stuff to you? How does that work?
We do have a lot of people who send stuff to us. Unfortunately, we cannot always accept everyone because, I mean, otherwise our gallery space would be just filled. But for example, we did 3 times now, we did an open call exhibition where people could just send in one artwork, and then we made a selection and we had a big exhibition with around 70-ish artists. And through that, we found a few really interesting ones who just didn't have the courage to go to a gallery and ask, hey, can I show my art here? Because it's always like kind of a barrier.
So you're creating that space for the next generation of the Daniel McLeod's as well.
Yeah, we're trying. We're not the first ones. Somebody was there before us for creating space for us, like Sumo, Sadea Stick. Like all these guys, they opened doors and windows for us so we can just continue their way and try to make the best opportunity, best of their opportunity that they gave us, and just try to follow this example and try to give more chances and more opportunity to upcoming people.
And then return to the Kamelibotek as well then. So it's not just a gallery, right? You think of it more than a gallery.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the vision of Rafael and Daniel when they started the whole project was to create a creative space rather than just like a commercial gallery. I mean, you kind of see it right when you enter it. It's more like, it's a different vibe from a White Cube gallery. And we also already hosted all kinds of cultural events. We had cooking workshops, we had theater
plays, concerts, readings, lectures, like everything that brings the cultural scene together. We already had something like it, and we just want to make the place a living place where you can live or get cultural experiences and not just sell artworks.
So if people wanted to, I don't know, maybe someone thought, I want to do an interesting team building session, I could go down there, paint some art and learn how to use spray cans. Is that something that can be done?
Yeah, I mean, we have a big pedagogical side as well, where we do workshops. Most of our team is even like has studies in that field. Also Thomas and Tessie, who work with us. So yeah, workshops is also like a big part, how we bring the art closer to people. Often it's with schools, with other institutions, but we also already had private groups who just were really interested in coming to the gallery and spraying all together.
Sounds like that'd be good fun, good corporate event or something like that. And then when you have exhibitions and open days, I always have this argument with Natasha, and I'll see something that's like Kamelibotek opening. I think I was there in the summer. You had an event and I said, oh, let's go down, Natasha. It'd be cool. It'd be a nice vibe. And she always says, oh, but if we're not necessarily going to buy anything, we shouldn't necessarily go, because then I feel as though we're bad and getting in the way. How should we think about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, we are open to everyone who wants to come down, if they have good intentions, of course. But yeah, everyone is welcome to come have a look, even if it's just to talk to us during the exhibitions. I mean, during the exhibitions, I'm 90% of the time talking to people. Sometimes talk about random art projects going on in Luxembourg, sometimes more specifically interested in the exhibitions, but we definitely do not force people to only come to our place if they buy something. So
I think we bought a few beers, so we bought a few
I think the
a few euros over the bar.
Biggest compliment in on this question, not once but quite often actually, that kids really like 6-7 years old from the street or from the neighborhood, they came, they rang the bell, yeah, we want to come enter the gallery and see the artworks. And yeah, that's like the whole point of running this place, to, yeah, to inspire people and bring them together.
To give that other opportunity to go in and see that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, to break in this barrier that you mentioned of the fear you have from White Cube galleries, and just bring it closer to people.
On that point, when is it open if people want to head down there?
So basically it's always open on Tuesdays, Thursdays and Saturdays from 2 p.m. till 6 p.m. But for the other days, there's almost every day at least someone of us who's there. So you can always just write an email at hello@kamelibotek.lu to just say, hey, is someone there? Can I come by? Can I have a look? Because, I mean, we know that sometimes people work, so they don't always have the time to come during the opening hours.
And then looking forward, then you said September's going to be a big event, a big show. Are you going to have many other events that will be open to the public?
So we have the big event that's in planning for September, but I mean, we also do have to mention that we still have our free art classes that are going on over the whole year, where we always have different subjects where people can just enroll. So that's one kind of event which could be interesting, and we will try to always keep people up to date if we have other events popping up.
Did you use the word free then as well?
Yeah, exactly. It's we give free art classes since
2019,
and it's really nice because I mean, we already have local people who come there quite often. I mean, the neighbors, they're always happy to bring their kids for the art classes. But we also now have people from all age who just randomly want to be a bit more creative again. And then they think, okay, let's go there. And yeah, we have to have different subjects. It goes from virtual reality painting to color madness, to calligraphy, to classic painting and drawing, and of course, street art and graffiti.
What's next for you then, Daniel? So you said at the start that you're exploring things. You're not the bird painter, you do other things. So what are you exploring?
Over the last couple months I've been working on a bit of a new style, new inspiration. Last summer I took a trip to Tanzania, and that was quite a life-changing experience. And yeah, so there's new stuff coming, a bit more African inspired.
So was that safari, or was it in the cities? Where in Tanzania were you?
We took a round trip, really. We lived in the villages with the people, but also slept in tents really in the middle of nowhere, just where you could hear the zebras and elephants breathe during the night. It was very intense.
That would frighten the life out of me. Absolutely frighten the life out of me.
Very intense, but yeah, life-changing and very, very inspiring. Because usually when I kind of took a vacation or traveled during the last couple of years, I never really, it was never a holiday, but always combined with some kind of project, or I reached out to galleries to get an appointment, or just try to combine it with work. But this time I just traveled with the sketchbook and just took pages and pages of notes and ideas I wrote down. And yeah, really excited to bring it to life. And right now I'm working on the first body of works that will be presented in at the Urban Art Fair in Paris in March.
Oh, fantastic.
So it's going to be the first public statement.
A big reveal of this new period in Daniel Matt Lloyd's work.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to that. I might not make it to Paris, but I'm hoping to see some photos on Instagram and so on. So if people want to get in contact and know more, where would they go?
I mean, mainly social media, Instagram page, just Kamelle Boutique, Facebook, or email. We have a website, kamelleboutique.lu, where there's also news and contact.
You find out about the free art classes there as well.
Yeah, exactly. There's the whole schedule of it. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Or just come around at the gallery.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both very much for coming in. And thanks to the listeners.